We are now joined by one of my favorite people in the world, my law partner, Patrick Dolan. Patrick is an employment lawyer. He has a couple decades worth of experience representing people nationwide in harassment, discrimination, retaliation suits of all types. And welcome to the show, Patrick.
Thanks, Karen. It's good to see you on the weekend.
I know.
We'll see each other tomorrow morning. And you're so nice to say a couple decades. It makes me feel younger because it's actually more like 30 years.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, thanks.
You gotta update.
I feel good about
update
that.
Update bio.
I don't really want to. But anyway, it's great to be here, of course.
There's always stuff about job law. Always stuff that's changing. Of course, now these days we have lots of things that are changing. But I want to talk about a couple things right off the bat here. That Illinois just passed a new law regarding discrimination. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about it? And I think this one is going to impact a lot of people.
Are you talking about the family responsibilities element?
I do, yes.
Yeah, so this is a really important law that Illinois just passed because it really fits a void that we have. Essentially, what the law says is that an employer cannot discriminate against someone who has family responsibilities. And we define that as being required to take care of somebody, taking them to the doctor's appointment, being home to take care of them, a family member, and that's broadly defined, right? So it could be your spouse, your partner, your child, your parent, even a parent-in-law. And so it doesn't, really importantly, Karen, though, it doesn't require the employer to accommodate that need, but it does prohibit the employer from discriminating on the basis of those family responsibilities. That did not exist before, and so that fills a very important void.
So to parse it is like, so you are taking care of your mother and you need 2 weeks off to do that. So this law doesn't say you get an extra 2 weeks on top of your family medical or paid sick leave or vacation time. It doesn't add any days off, right?
No, it doesn't. Let me give you a really good example, because this happened to my client. So I had a client, worked at a big pharma. She worked at home taking care of her son who had severe disabilities. He needed full-time care. The company was always fine with that. She was able to do a job. She was very successful in her role, etc. Then the company said, you know what? We want you to come back to the office to work full-time. And she said, oh, why? I do my job great. And they're like, it's the new policy. Everyone's returning. So it became a really big issue. And what we found out was somebody else was allowed to work from home, right? So now she's being discriminated against because she's staying at home taking care of that child. At this point, Karen, the law did not exist. So it was really hard for us to work around that issue. So now the law would protect her and say, you can't treat her differently. If she's taking care of what she needs to do at work, she's doing it well, she should be able to continue to work from home and take care of her child.
And, you know, if you're going to protect people in this world, you know, protecting our caretakers is so important. And I will say this, and maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to me that caretaking tends to fall upon women a little bit more than men. So even during COVID, I saw so many people in the workplace, it was the woman who stayed home with the child who wasn't going to school. And I see so many women are taking care of their mothers and their elderly fathers. That's not always the case, but I think that this is going to help women in the workforce.
I'm sure it will. Most of my clients who I discuss these issues with are women. And so this Illinois law protects them in ways that they have not been protected before, male or female, frankly. So I think it's a really big and positive change for employees in Illinois.
It's a good thing. So before we take a break, and I don't want to get into the politics of anything really today, but the issue of federal workers being fired. Mm. Just generally speaking, your job's eliminated because there's a cut to the agency, say, that you work for. And what are your rights in a situation like that?
You know what, Karen? It really depends on where what status you have. If you're a probationary employee, working for any of the federal agencies, frankly, you can be terminated without much of any process. If you're not, if you're a full-time regular employee, much like folks who have protections under a collective bargaining agreement or any kind of union rule, They have to, you have to go through a process to terminate them. They can't just be terminated. So, Karen, really unlike the private sector, where frankly, you can just be terminated at any point, reason, no reason doesn't matter, notice doesn't normally need to be given, etc. That is not the case for non-probationary federal employees. So that's what we're seeing right now. A lot of pushback about these employees being terminated without going through that process. So it's become a big deal, and I think it's going to be bigger.
Are there going to be class actions? Because it seems to me that so many people are affected that are they all going to file lawsuits? Are we going to have massive clog up of the federal court system?
Yeah, there's already a bunch of lawsuits, and yeah. I've already talked to a number of people who are seeking legal counsel about these issues. In, you know, obviously D.C. has the biggest probably federal government employee population, but every state has federal employees. It's become a big issue. And to your point, you're going to see a lot of lawsuits, and those in the same department, I think, will join together to file collective or class actions.
What a mess.
Just, it is a mess.
It's keeping us, we've got lawyers busy and the judiciary busy. We're talking to Patrick Dolan. We're talking about employment. If you have a question in the next 15 minutes or so, give us a call here. I'm sure Patrick would love to answer your questions. 312-981-7200. Thanks for listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. We are talking with Patrick Dolan, who has 3 decades of experience. He aged a little bit during the commercial break. Patrick, thank you for coming in.
Great to see you.
It's good to see you. I know I'll see you
before
tomorrow.
Before Monday morning?
Before tomorrow. Yeah, and you're kind of casual. Well, you're always casual, actually.
Oh, thanks, Karen. Jeez. Well, you look so nice, and now I feel like a schlub.
Well, I feel like when I do the radio show, like a lot of people come here in sweatpants and things like that, but I just don't feel...
Okay, let's be clear. I'm not wearing sweatpants right now. I've got some nice blue pants on. I just kicked up my legs so people could see, you could see my hand. I've got a nice shirt, but, you know, I don't look as nice as you. You always look really nice.
Well, I just feel like I do better when I look better.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Maybe
it's
I'll try that out.
Okay, so you said you had a shout-out.
I do. So longtime friends of ours, Dean and Dawn Derleth, who we met long time ago when we lived in California. Their son, Sam, is about to start law school at Wisconsin, which is where I went. He got a big scholarship because, you know, he's just so awesome. And he's going to start in the fall. So anytime someone starts out a law school career, I like to give them some support, some enthusiasm. As we know, it's 3 years that you kind of have your ups and downs, but it's a great experience. Madison's a great place to go to law school, so I'm really happy for Dean and Dawn and their son, Sam.
Yeah, it's we get a lot of people who listen in and tell me, you know, hey, my kid or my niece or nephew is going to law school, and what are some of the things that they should be doing to prepare? What would you tell people? Like, you know, hey, my kid wants to be a lawyer, you know, in high school. So what are the things that you think, and I'll weigh in too, on what you think a child should do to kind of get up to speed on doing well in law school and then being a lawyer?
I think any kind of debate class in high school or college is great, any kind of speech class. But you know what? We know this, Karen. The most important thing is writing.
It's so true.
Yeah, writing is the most. You're going to write motions and briefs. And judges are going to, you know, judge you based on what you've written and how well it's written, how thorough, literally your punctuation, your phraseology, like the structure of what you write. Writing is critical for lawyers. So that's what I would say. Focus on writing.
And I think that, you know, in this day and age with texting and all of that, we have come to be less formal in the way we communicate in writing. And that's fine. And I'm willing to move with the times. But when it comes to the law, it's sort of the last bastion of formality.
Yeah, you really shouldn't be informal with it.
Even appellate courts will measure your margins and will reject your brief if they're not compliant. So, you know, like you said, just grammar and punctuation and knowing the right way to say and do things in writing is just really crucial. I would add to it, too, go and spend some time with a lawyer before you make that decision that you're going to go through 4 years of college and 3 years of law school, get to the law firm, and you hate what's going on. It also would kind of maybe steer you to the type of law that might be good for you.
That's a really good point also. You know, stock yourself with a bunch of caffeine. I mean, it's going to be a long 3 years.
It's not Red Bull, so.
Right, whatever it takes, Karen. But you know what? David Ellis, who's coming on later, I would really like his opinion about the style of writing that he sees.
Yes.
You brought up informal versus formal. I love his opinion as an appellate court justice here in Illinois. Like, what does he read and kind of cringes about when he reads it? And I think that'd be really interesting. We can talk with him about that.
Yeah. And you know, I think a lot of people think that you have to write formally as a lawyer. And you don't have to. You can write like Hemingway, noun, verb, noun, get your point across. I find that flowery and formal language is really off-putting to a lot of people. And it's clubby and it's really not persuasive in my view.
I agree.
Interesting. So let's go back to the law you practice here, this employment stuff. What is going, first of all, let's talk about the EEOC. Tell our listeners, everyone kind of knows what the EEOC is, but what exactly do they do and why is it an important organization?
So the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is a federal agency that enforces discrimination, retaliation, harassment laws, federal laws. They also protect folks from unequal wages and things like that. It's the federal agency. The Illinois equivalent, every state has its own state law equivalent. That's the Illinois Department of Human Rights. So if you have a discrimination, retaliation, or harassment issue at work, if you're going to pursue that in a claim, Karen, you must file with either the federal or the state agency before you can go to federal or state court.
And they investigate and determine if there's cause or not cause.
Right. They investigate. The EEOC or the Illinois Department of Human Rights will investigate. They also try to mediate and settle these matters, right? But they'll investigate, and then no matter what they decide, you're going to get what's called a right to sue, so you can file that lawsuit if you want to pursue it in court.
So, I mean, looking at this, it's such an important organization. First of all, there's no charge, right?
Mm-hmm. There's none.
There's no charge. So it's not like you have a filing fee,
right.
And you don't even need a lawyer at that point.
That's right.
You can't have a lawyer, but you can do it yourself, so you don't have to incur the cost. And listen, when you're fired from a job or you're being mistreated at a job, the last thing you want to do is shell out thousands of dollars for a lawyer. And if you can't do that and you need a lawyer, then you're not going to bring the charge. So it's really important, and it does resolve. It covers what, about 150 million Americans? Is that?
Yeah, it does. I mean, listen, private employers, public employers, depending on the law, some you have to be of certain size. Sometimes it's 10 or 15 or 50, depending on the law you're seeking to enforce. But in Illinois, here's an important point, Karen. In Illinois, all you need is one employee for all of these state law protections in the workplace to be afforded to you. So that's really good.
We have good laws in
Illinois has really good employment laws that protect employees in many different ways.
So what is going on with the EEOC? I hear there's dismantling, people are getting terminated. What is going on to your knowledge, and how is this going to impact workers? How is it going to impact employers?
So every time we have a change in administration, the makeup of the EEOC, in other words, the folks who lead it, change. Okay. That's important because they tend to emphasize certain things that the EEOC does. Here with the Trump administration, definitely a move to the right. Now, the big thing that I think people are reading about is the fact that they will no longer enforce claims of transgender discrimination, retaliation, harassment. Okay. They do not, they being the current make of the EEOC, does not think that transgender rights are protected under that federal law, that Title VII federal law. That's a big change from before the Trump administration came in. So that's point number one. And I think it's a pretty big point.
And so is there truly a dismantling of the EEOC? I mean, I read these things and you just, these days, you know, depending on what you're reading, you're not sure what the facts truly are. But there are people who are crying out, hey, if you dismantle the EEOC, we're going to have unfairness in the workplace, you know, back to the 1960s.
I don't think it's a dismantling as much as it's a shift in focus. Another example is discrimination cases, okay? As we all know, there's a real big pushback on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, practices, et cetera, in the workplace. And so the EEOC is, I think, not going to emphasize those claims in terms of how it prosecutes those things, right? You can still file for discrimination, harassment, retaliation, but how the EEOC investigates, that's going to change. And there's a recent case in the Supreme Court where a white woman claims that she was discriminated on the basis of her being straight versus a gay male. And the EEOC, I'm pretty sure, is going to take that issue and expand upon it and say, listen, white folks have the same discrimination, harassment, retaliation concerns that folks who are minorities do as well, and we're going to prosecute those claims. Karen, that has historically not really been the case, and also the standard for white employees was higher to prove discrimination. I am certain that is going to change with this Supreme Court case. It's going to be the same as everybody else.
And, you know, you kind of go back and forth on this, and we can all have our opinions about this. But I think one argument is that, you know, white males have dominated jobs and whatever for all these years. And the reason these laws were passed were to, you know, basically say we're not going to allow people to discriminate and only hire white males. Yep. So to allow white males the same standard, is that fair? Is that not fair? On the other hand, if they're truly being discriminated against because of their race, is that not the same argument that a person who is an African-American woman would
and that's
have?
That's a perfect summary of the issue. I think before we had those concerns, I think things are changing now. I talk with a lot of white employees who believe they've been discriminated against on the basis of race. And I, you know, frankly, used to tell them it's just harder. The standard is a little bit harder under the law, but now I think the standard is going to be the same. And frankly, if you're discriminated against on the basis of race, you're going to have to show it just like anybody else.
And I guess that makes sense. Let's talk. We've got literally 1 minute. I know, sure. Non-compete clauses, that's a lot of what you do as a lawyer. What's the current state of a non-compete? And just tell our listeners really quickly what these non-competes are.
So those are provisions in a contract or a separation agreement that prohibit you from working for a competitor. Okay, they are enforceable in Illinois. They're enforceable under certain circumstances in most states in this country. Certain states like California and a couple other states do not enforce non-competes under any circumstances. The federal government tried to eliminate them. That failed. I'll give you a short version. So we're back to where we were the whole time, Karen. In Illinois, non-competes are enforceable under certain circumstances.
So before you sign it, before you get that job, you better know what it says. A lot of people just sign it blindly, then they leave and they then try to compete, and it's a disaster. So these are very important, and it wouldn't be a bad idea to have a lawyer look at a non-compete.
Yeah, before you take that next job, that's when you have to discern whether the non-compete's enforceable.
That's right.